This episode of Film Sack is brought to you in part by Audible.com, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. Get unabridged books that are amazing, read by the likes of George Guidel and others. What an amazing library to choose from. You might like The Martian, which I just finished. Great sci-fi, totally cool. Should check that one out. So many books available, and you can get one absolutely for free by going to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack today. That's audiblepodcast.com/filmsack.
War hero, huh? So, the brass decided to reward you with a little, little appointment to the California Sun.
Have a walnut, Boyd.
Martha brought him in fresh from San Miguel. This is my hobby.
Me.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack Post Nerdtacular Edition. Episode 209. That last one was 208. And we're back. My name is Scott Johnson. This is the podcast that mines the very depths of Film Sack. No, of film entertainment for all mankind, not a Film Sack. We don't do that either. I don't know. Maybe we do a little bit.
Mine the depths of Film Sack.
Film Sack, right. It's a second podcast. Fooled ya. Joining me, Scott Johnson, tonight is Brian Bourbon Now Dunaway.
Ah, yes, the bourbon. And backwards walk, slowly closed door, peer through door holes. Yep. Confirm, dude snuggling in a bear trap. Native American lady, out! Crackers be eating each other up in here. I'll stop squirming. I know I cannibalized that whole opening. Because cannibals.
Oh, because cannibals. I get it.
Cuddling on the bear trap. Nicely said. Also with us, Randy, he was licking me, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Welcome back, by the way.
So, thank you. Fort yes. Film Sack. The Spanish built this podcast as a mission. We inherited it. We don't get much traffic, so we keep a skeleton company that consists of Private Dunaway, who is our emissary from the Lord. That would be Lord Kimboat. And Private Ibbot, who never met a bottle he didn't like, even when it results in him having to excuse himself to go puke real quick. And then there's Major Johnson, the over-medicated Major Johnson. And you and I make five or... six. Sorry. Just eat your steak swimming in red water already.
Oh, that was so gross.
Ooh, yeah.
Delicious.
As a guy who enjoys or has enjoyed in his life a good steak, good heavens. Was that what we had during that poor war? Who knows? All right.
A soupy steak.
Rounding us out today, Mr. Brian, man, meat will cure you of everything a bit.
So would you guys care to join me for supper? We're having shepherd's pie. Yes, yes, with real shepherd. And later, we're going to have some stew made from a guy named Stew and a side of Johnny cakes. And for dessert, lady fingers. But I cheated with those. No, it's sponge cake. I ran out of rum, so I used brandy.
Nice.
I smelled a penis joke. That's what I smelled.
Were those like those little potatoes in that stew? Because I was really hoping those were potatoes.
Yes, not testicles.
They were potatoes. Yeah.
I don't think there were enough testicles on that doctor guy to feed everybody.
It looked like those in one ladle. There was about four potatoes. So I'm hoping those were testicles.
We should probably make it clear right up front here that this movie called Ravenous, 1999 film. I thought it was newer than that, but 99. Is a movie that we would have not normally had on the list, although I actually think it worked pretty well as a Film Sack movie, but it wasn't really on our radar, per se. And we have this deal with Corinne Lewis, who helps me run Nerdtacular every year. She does an enormous amount of work. And all she ever asks in payment is for us to take a certain movie. We did it with Big Trouble, Little China, and I can't remember the other one. There was another one where she says, just sack this movie, and we're square for the year. So this is the movie this year that she wanted us to make sure and sack. Now, she wanted me to clarify one thing. She doesn't like this movie very much. So it's not like this is, oh, I love this movie. What? You guys got to cover
that
it.
Needs clarification.
Yeah.
She is not. She just felt like it needed to be seen by us because of its it's pretty weird. It's a weird, yeah, it's a weird thing. And on that level, and knowing that that was kind of her intent, I'm, after now seeing it, I also don't love it, but I also think it is weird and it's totally worth talking about and trying to figure out what the hell is going on there in everybody's head, how a movie like this exists, you know, what worked, what didn't. So Corinne, here it is. This is your payment. Marcus, off your little ledger there, your spreadsheet. Because we've done all we can do. All right, swooping in to Scott Fletcher to explain more about Ravenous, and he doesn't do it alone. In fact, he doesn't do it at all. He has his buddy, whose name currently eludes me. Hold on, I'm going to pull his name up and give him credit. His name is Paul Arbisi. He lives near Fletcher there in Peoria, Illinois, and he stepped in. He's a voice actor, by the way. And yeah, kind of cool, a little guest voice actor. So he's come on here to do a little VO for us and tell us more about Ravenous. Take it away.
Ravenous! In 19th century California, soldiers at an army outpost treat an injured man who tells them horrific tales of resorting to cannibalism while stranded.
Good Lord.
Wow.
That's wow. Totally different Fletcher, but I like it.
Some kind of rascal voice, you know?
It's what's that? Yeah, the guy that the big bushy white beard always plays an old miner.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you guys, get in here. We got plenty of gold for everyone. Yeah, that guy.
Yes.
Anyway, thanks for that, Paul and Scott Fletcher. It was so lickety fast, he barely got any of it. But yeah, it's this weird Civil War story where mm-hmm. I'm not even sure
it's the Civil War. You're gonna get us yelled at.
It's
Stop
supposed
it.
To be, isn't it?
No, it's American Mexican War.
Oh,
American Mexican War.
Oh.
I really there was a Mexican outpost that Guy Pearce had to take control of.
Oh, yes. I thought that. Oh, right.
Right. Yeah, and right at the beginning of the movie, he's in so the desert. Like, the one thing I can tell you for sure about the Civil War, probably not a lot of battles fought with cactus everywhere.
Mm, this is true. For those not in the know, the Mexican-American War, or as I like to call it, the Amex War. it occurred between the United States and the Centralist Republic of Mexico. Let's see. This was from 1846 to 1848.
Well, you're not reading that from like that's just off the top of your head.
Oh,
right?
Totally, right out of my brain. Totally. Yeah, right. I never read out of the Wikipedia. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Now, Scott might be quoting the books on the subject that he's read.
Right,
you know, like he might inadvertently.
Yeah,
sure. Well, it'd be hard not to.
What I like about it is the treaty. You guys know the name of the treaty, right? Check it out. It's called the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo.
No,
that's awesome. That's basically that's
a treaty.
You really should have had Randy say that.
Here's the translation, though. It's that translates to the Treaty of Made movie with a horse in it. So there you go. That's your Guadalupe.
Sounds
like a Mexican maid to me. Guadalupe, bring me my shoes. Anyway, that's not important. Screw that, because this movie, it may as well have been Civil War. My point is that I don't feel like anybody was dressing for the era. I feel like there was some like weird fantasy clothes.
Totally. I mean,
didn't that seem wrong to you? It felt wrong.
It was well costumed, but it did feel like they went in and raided some other movie set. Yeah. I mean, the costumes were fantastic.
The whole movie was like that, though. I feel like we can kind of set a precedent for talking about any part of the film.
Yeah.
You know, by saying there's some weird sort of make it up as you go along stuff. Your music, lighting, acting, directing,
music for sure. Because occasionally you'd have like a little twangy 1800s style something, but it would turn into this like heart pounding. Sam Fisher is going to save Echelon 5 from destruction music. And then on to something completely different, kind of comedic and weird, like almost like a Coen Brothers movie, that Chase Through the Woods.
Yeah. Oh, the Chase Through the Woods with a rear.
That was Raised in Arizona or Oh Brother. I was trying to figure it out because it was very close to either one of those. Yeah.
Now, did you guys look to see who did the score?
Yes. No, did you?
Yeah, I
didn't. Yes. Damon Albarn from Blur and Gorillaz.
Mm-hmm. Wait, Blur, you mean woohoo!
Okay. That's the blur, yeah.
All right, got it.
They did so much more than that.
Wait, that's you've told me this before, that, right? I think you've told me that, yeah.
Maybe multiple times.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, girls and boys and yeah.
And Michael Nyman.
Who's that?
Michael Nyman.
Yeah,
there was also the
other person who composed music.
Oh, I didn't see that guy's name.
What does he do?
I'm not going to blame everything on Damon Albarn then.
I thought you were going to say to two different people.
No.
He looks very Jewish, according to his Wikipedia thing there. He's actually an English composer of minimalist music.
Yes.
Well, if he's not English, he must not be Jewish then.
Nah, right?
I like that. This sure guy looks like a Jew.
Yeah, this he looks like a Jew. What's wrong with this Jew?
What's going on here? He didn't do a very good job. I didn't like any of the music. No, I think it was super weird and you didn't like it.
I thought the music was the best thing about this movie.
Well, it definitely established the tone that hey, you're not gonna. This isn't gonna make a lot of sense, and it's gonna feel distorted and not in the right time. I mean, the music contributed to that. So if that was their goal, then the music is chief among the offenders here.
But if you were going to make it a surrealist film, like you'd think they would have actually gotten to some surreal elements because there weren't, it was a pretty straightforward thing.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like they occasionally dropped the camera or, you know, like there weren't times when you questioned whether or not the main character was, you know, sane, like he was observing everything correctly. Yeah.
The only
supernatural
stuff they did was like, if you eat other people, you become stronger and
the quickening, right?
Yeah, and you can heal fast and escape death and all that.
So the music was bad, but it could have been bad and fit the movie, and it didn't.
Yeah.
You think so?
It didn't fit the movie at all.
I think it very much fit the movie, and the fact that this whole movie is supposed to make you feel unsettled.
Yeah.
And they did that quite
well. I'll agree with you if that was their intent. If their intent was to say, let's have something completely disjointed from what you would expect from a movie like this, then mission accomplished. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you definitely knew it was set tonally very early on, of course, with the eating of the meat that's going everywhere. And most effectively is when they're at the
eating of the meat.
eating of the meat.
Yeah.
Most effectively was when they arrived at the cave that ironically did not like a vagina.
No.
And they were there.
Did not look like a vagina or did not like a vagina?
It did not either. Okay. Either one. All right. But it did not look like a vagina. Right. And so when the primary cannibal guy there, what was his name? What's the actor?
Yeah, Robert Carlyle.
Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. Right. I love that guy.
He was right. And he was, I think he turned out to be that guy. And so he's like totally freaking out, and he makes that scene so heightened.
Yeah,
I mean the whole scene's a really good scene.
I'm actually bugged by that scene though because it was all a ruse, right? Like he just wanted to lure more victims into his man meat party he was having up there, and him faking
a sausage fest.
Why did he bother licking lost guy's wound?
But he couldn't help that.
That was the perfect example of what I wondered about this film. It seemed like there were times when they wanted it to be a black comedy.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure.
But instead of it, that could have been actually black comedy. And instead I'm just like, no, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
go ahead.
Maybe I've just been ruined by things like Coen Brothers movies.
Maybe.
Right. Right. Which have weirdness like that pays off as opposed to weirdness for just weird sake.
Yeah.
And you don't like, you're not like laughing out loud, but you get, oh, that's supposed to be funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when Dickie Bennett is yelling from Faraday? You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Faraday from Lost. Yeah. When he, a couple of Justified folk in here, by the way, get him and your, who's the other one?
Oh, Neil McDonough.
Oh, Neil McDonough. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It was great third season of Justified. I forgot about him.
I got a thing to say about him later.
I almost did a greeting that was
gorgeous blue eyes.
I almost made my greeting for this episode a rework of his Cadillac commercial.
Oh, yeah. The one that everyone hated or loved. And,
yeah. I decided, you know what? I don't know.
That thing really divided people.
It's a very hateful thing.
That ad. Mm-hmm. He's also Brian Dunaway be happy because remember he was threatened with a puke stick in Minority Report, so don't forget that moment.
Yes. Good job.
But anyway, when Dickie's out there yelling that, I immediately went, now that's a scene and a whole idea of somebody licking your wound that's totally Coen Brothers territory, and they could have made that moment so much more than just this throwaway. In other words, all of it. Like, you know what? Those guys could make a cannibal movie set in the Mexican-American War that I would totally be into because they do this already. They do dark satire better than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And this felt like a really weird, kind of raw, not very good version of that. They had a director that was on the job only a couple of weeks and then quit in a huff. And then they brought some lady in and she finished it and she's dead now, so she can speak no tale. Who knows what happened?
Yeah, and I would actually say, actor-wise, this was a very well-acted movie. Guy Pearce is fantastic. Sure. Robert Carlyle, Jeffrey Jones, Ferris Bueller's principal,
Ferris Bueller's principle is the best thing in the movie.
Brian, this is not. Can I just stop real quick? I always need to do these when these happen. Brian Ibbett needs to be reminded to watch Deadwood because Jeffrey Jones plays one of the greatest characters in Deadwood. I love his character in Deadwood.
You know what? It's funny. That same Entertainment Weekly that I mentioned before the show, which will not make any sense to the people listening to this podcast, I just realized, has a like a binge watch recommendation for Deadwood. Say, you know, basically there's an article saying, go binge watch Deadwood right now.
It's
Stop
so
what
good.
You're doing. Interesting. Whatever you're binge
it's
watching.
So good. You got to bump it up your list. This is, you know, you saying that so nobody understood it reminds me of Film Sack and Nerdtacular last week. We spent like, I don't know, five, six real human minutes dedicating the episode to Randy's absence. That he's not here. We miss him. Thanks, Scott Fletcher, for sitting in. But this episode's for you, Randy. All right, here we go. And then they didn't record that part.
Oh, no, really?
No, so what ended up happening is we have an episode that we posted where in all our minds and hearts, we've said plenty of things.
Right.
But the whole thing goes to the end without a single mention. We don't even act like Randy's not there.
Right, exactly. It's like it's what business as usual.
Yeah, so all these emails.
What are you looking for?
I get these emails going, where's Randy? No one said anything. I'm like, no, we did say something. It just didn't get recorded. Anyway, that's not the point. Back to your point. Though. Yeah. Jeffrey Jones. He's the man.
Ferris Bueller's principal.
Yeah, he's great. Yes.
For some reason, I can't ever not think about his character in Amadeus.
Oh, yeah.
thank goodness you didn't say Howard the Duck.
Yeah. Nah. Well, how can we forget that? I need some toot. Speaking of which, I need a little toot.
He played an emperor.
Wasn't that movie? It was Toot, right? Yeah.
It was doing toot.
That was the movie.
Gotta do some toot.
Back to Amadeus.
What a piece of shit. Anyway, Amadeus, remind us what did he do in there? What was his deal?
It's like everybody in the movie. He was
the piano man? What was he?
No, he was a crazy emperor.
So wait, at the end at the end of that movie. Imogen Kukwa, what's his name? That guy's awesome. He's in Guardians of the Galaxy. Anyway, the guy in that movie you're just referring to.
Amadeus.
Yeah, at the very end, they're on that bus and he gives him that warm gummy bear from his pocket. Remember that? That was a hell of a scene.
That was great.
Spielberg just nailed it, I think, at the end
of
that.
I'm so confused right now.
The funny thing is that Spielberg's not in it. Anyway, it had nothing to do with it. So anyway. Yeah, Jeffrey Jones kicking it. Let's forget about his child porn thing or whatever for now and just remember the Jeffrey Jones.
Oh, there was a thing, wasn't there?
Yeah,
forgot about that.
Him and Pee Wee Herman were like swapping hard drives or some weird thing.
Oh my gosh. Never mind. Now
it was too. Those guys were working together. It was
that ever,
substantiated?
Substantiated, yeah. Or was it just, you know, allegations that were later proved false and nobody ever remembers?
I think it was. It went a pretty good pace.
I'm going to find it.
The falsening.
I'm going to find it. Pee-wee and Jeffrey Jones.
Really, it was really the two of them together?
Yep. Here it is. Jeffrey Jones and Paul Rubens charge in sex probe.
Sex probe. What a horrible news title.
Washed up celebrities. Jeffrey Jones, something, something.
Oh, there we go. Actually, here it is right here. According to Smoking Gun, he pleaded no contest in July 2003. So there you go. That's.
Yeah. Went on to. So this is after this movie. But then he went on to do Deadwood, and critics loved him in that. So
sure,
I don't know why we're so Jeffrey Jones focused, but he's a hell of a thing on screen. I mean, let's forget all that other stuff aside. He is a very interesting actor to watch, say things, make faces, and he'll ever be such a key part of the Ferris Bueller mythos. You have to have that antithesis to the main character of Dude. You know?
I want to applaud that you just used mythos and antithesis in the same
sentence.
Did
I do that? I could have used mythos. Anyway, all right. Yeah, you're right. 2003, he totally... I'm sorry that this incident was allowed to occur. Such an event has never happened before, and it will never happen again, a.k.a. keep better passwords on my computer. Jones said outside court, 56 at the time, year old actor, appeared in the films Beetlejuice, Sleepy Hollow, and was Emperor Joseph II in 1984's Amadeus. So there you go, Randy.
We're drilling up to talking about Guy Pearce, right?
Yeah, we'll get to the guy. I like Guy Pearce. You mean the guy that didn't say a word until 20 minutes into the film?
No, he actually said one word. He said swimming. Yeah. I noticed.
All right, well, he didn't say any lines. Let's put it that way.
Right.
20 minutes. He had to just Tourette it out in the middle of his thing. Swimming! Okay, cut. We'll keep it. I like Guy Pearce. He's an Australian you can get behind. He's cool.
Especially if you're into smoking pot.
Sure. Really? Why?
Yeah, you didn't see this recent news with this guy?
No, what?
I like to Google everybody in the cast if there's a lot of actors. And Guy Pearce recently, this is the Mirror UK news source, but yeah, he basically spent a year in his house just smoking marijuana.
Just toking the weed?
Just toking it. He's like, this Hollywood crap, I'm out.
What for? What's the point?
To relax, to get out of the mode, getting out of the Hollywood thing.
Okay. He just,
really?
Yeah. Oh.
Well, he's older than me, so I don't blame him.
He's older than me. He looks. Have you seen pictures of him recently?
Yeah, mullet. Sweet mullet. Whatever. The guy doesn't age. He looks great.
I'll have you know, he's not technically Australian.
Oh, I thought he was. Where is he from? He's born in England. United Kingdom. Yeah, Cambridgeshire. Good lord.
And moved to Australia when he was a little kid. Then his dad died, and so you have to stay wherever your dad dies.
Yeah, isn't that the deal?
Because he might come back. You see,
yeah, just right.
The ghost of Guy Pearce's father.
His ghost to show up and lead you into a cabin with Jacob. Sure, I know.
Tell you a tale of the Pierce ghost. He's cool, and I like movies he's in. And a lot of people don't remember this, but him, Eric Bana, and one other famous Australian actor were the sharks in that Finding Nemo.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I remember just thinking,
friends, not food.
I remember that being just such a cool thing.
Yeah,
that they were all in that thing together. But then, all right, so hold on here. Geoffrey Jones, just a reminder, this is like his third or fourth film sack movie with us, right?
Okay.
Guy Pearce, only second appearance, I believe.
Right.
Because it was Lockout.
Lockout, that was it.
Oh, yeah.
And where that was just
really
a year or two ago, yeah.
We haven't done the remake of The Time Machine. I guess not.
No.
We talked about doing L.A. Confidential.
We did, which I think that would be actually... I'd like that one because I haven't seen it.
And the movie I would love to sit and watch with you guys, I don't know if I really would needs to be a Film Sack episode, but I love his Count of Monte Cristo. That's like one of my
favorite. It's awesome.
Yeah. I like that too.
It's got Jesus in it. He's the bad guy, the friend that kind of turns on him. Guy Pearce, right, I mean. Right, right. But he's got that Jesus guy. he played Jesus in the Mel
you were so fun, dude. Jim Caviezel.
Jim Caviezel.
Oh, the yeah, right.
Jim
Last Temptation of Christ.
Jesus is his name. That movie's great. It's got the original Dumbledore in there in that early part, and it's got that guy that's he was in The Crow. Remember the yelling dude from The Crow? He's great. Oh my gosh, damn! I'm with Randy on this one. That's a great.
People discount
that movie. I think that movie's awesome.
No, I liked it too.
Yeah.
It's got a really bad pedigree. It was directed by Kevin Reynolds, who made the Kevin Costner Robin Hood, who made Waterworld.
Hey, no smack talking my Waterworld. Take it easy. I'll give him a pass on that one. Okay. Anyway. He takes a girl down to see Colorado in a dome. Come on now.
Up, 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 up. anything with Richard Harris in it. I will watch anything with Richard Harris.
Yeah, let's go watch. You know what I've been craving lately is Unforgiven.
Unforgiven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's so good in that. Yep. So good in that. Anyway, Guy Pearce, still got it, still doing his stuff. He's good. Oh, Iron Man 3, probably the most recent thing we've seen him in, not for this show.
Oh, yeah, right. Yes, when he takes the extremis.
Yeah.
Becomes
we never guy. Knew he was coming. Right. There you go. I think I just spoiled the movie. That's all right, though, right? It's okay. Did I spoil it a little bit? It'd be hard to know unless you saw it, right? You wouldn't know.
Yeah, you did fine.
Okay, that's fine. Let's see. It's more trivia here. You got your... Robert Carlyle in the DVD documentary said that Guy Pearce is a vegetarian and stoically underwent multiple takes, like you do with any scene. Many, many takes of him eating that life-saving Knox stew, which is based on the dude that died, is in fact a very nice lamb stew prepared by the film's caterers, chomping into large chunks of meat, and then they spat them out as soon as the director yelled cut. And I heard the same story about Uncle Rico in the Napoleon Dynamite movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's a super hardcore vegetarian, mm-hmm. and they kept putting that steak in his mouth, and he'd have to just... In fact, there's supposed to be a scene in Napoleon Dynamite where you see him begin his turn to just hork it into a can.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
But then they cut it right in time before he saw it. Which also leads me to a trope, which Daryl will appreciate if you're listening, Daryl, right here. There's barfing in every movie.
Mm. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And then early barfing. Very first thing you do really is barf.
Yeah.
And then another guy later. Like, so what are you doing?
I've been waiting for days because I watched this movie many days ago. I've been waiting for days to ask you guys this question. Why?
Why barfing?
What was going on? It was so, like, can anybody explain the entire beginning of this movie to me? Because
I thought it was being told in flashbacks. I thought he was going to go, he was at this dinner, right, getting this promotion and stuff, yeah. And then him getting sick and worrying about how the meat looked and it reminded him of war and everything. I thought this was now going to be, oh, now we're going to go back and find out why he's so screwed up. I didn't know he was still heading there, you know?
I knew enough about it being about cannibalism that I thought, oh, okay, yeah, he's reacting to this and we're going to find out why he's reacting to this and the whole cannibalism thing afterwards. But as I understand it, like when he was faking dead,
yeah,
and he was buried in that pile of bodies and the blood was dripping in his mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from his commander.
It wasn't his.
Right. Well, no, obviously it wasn't his, but it was, yeah, from his commanding officer.
Yeah.
But was that kind of the, I don't know, like the beginning of what would turn into the hunger for him? Like, because I know that What's-His-Face brought that back up and said.
Oh, good point.
It is because that's how he was able to pull himself from the bottom of many, many weighted dead bodies on top of him. That's what he said. He actually got the strength to fight after consuming the blood. And so he kind of saw, he's like, you know, he has a crippling fear of confrontation. And this allowed him to overcome that, and that's part of his morality.
See, I really didn't get that thing. Like he's at the bottom of a hand cart, yeah. And there's at least eight people on him, and I don't care. I don't care how they're stacked.
Right,
you're not getting out from under.
No, they're way too many. Yeah,
yeah.
So he got he got hulked up by the blood. Yeah, and that cart. Where did Eric Idle just park that thing, or what was going on? Exactly. What is that in the Mexican American War?
It was not constructed to actually wheel bodies around. Right. It was constructed to hold those props.
Right. And hey, guys, join me for a moment as I pause and tell you about our friends at Audible.com. Audible.com. You know, they're an Amazon company now, which means you're going to get all kinds of great backing. They're going to be around forever. And the purchases you make now are going to last a lifetime. I love everything they produce. It is one of my favorite ways to jog, drive, and otherwise spend my time listening to cool things. I love audiobooks. I love fantasy. I love sci-fi. There's something there for everyone. More than 150,000 downloadable titles. I might recommend, like I mentioned at the top of the show, The Martian by Andrew Weir. Is it Andrew Weir? I think so. What an amazing book. I cannot wait to see how that film adaptation goes. But it's great to be here kind of at the cusp of that thing and hear what may potentially be an incredible movie as well. Such good stuff, read by such great narrators and readers. I just love it. And if you haven't ever tried it, I want you to get a free book. Okay, so here's our offer to you. Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. That's the one. audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. Go there today and get any audiobook of your choice absolutely free. That's audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. Do it today.
The bigger question in all of that, okay, so I'm understanding why the sight of the steaks, by the way, steak and water, that's what you serve at that event. Ugh. out right. In the desert, steak
blood,
and water.
Blood, yeah. Water.
Ugh. Man, there was so much, like, there was like all these glasses of water all over the table, and I couldn't help stopping and thinking, are they trying to make a point here? I don't care.
No, with a big dinosaur femur bone right in the middle of it. But anyway,
so then he goes and pukes, and then this is what I'm asking. I hate you. I'm sending you as far away from me as I possibly can. You bastard. Why? What's that?
Oh, because he cowered it out. He cowered it out and allowed his men to get killed. He was a hero when he first came back and heralded as a hero. Because
then he admitted it.
Yeah, then he admitted it, and then they were disgusted by him, and they said, "Oh, that's it.
Oh, you're a hero because you faked your death and
right. Send you to F Troop.
Yeah, and you're
that's right, exactly. Yeah,
but that didn't make sense to me at all. Because it seems like, especially in the military, the ends justify the means, right? And especially when you like what he did was capture the enemy leader in his base. Like that's awesome. You are definitely not a coward. In this situation, so.
That's modern sensibility. This is 1800s. You know, they don't.
Well, they need to establish him as, hey, you're a coward, so he could then coward out again when Neil McDonough was on the run.
Yeah. Back then, everything was Klingon. You are without honor.
Yeah,
exactly.
But now that you've really made it clear, though, that he was getting super strength and all that blood to get out of that pile of bodies, then it really starts to bug me because then everything else is based on this fake completely non-scientific idea that
I thought
other people are going to make you stronger. It's weird.
Right. I thought that the cannibalism effect would only really worked if you were within the vicinity of the Wendigo.
Yeah.
Wendigo.
Wait, was it? Hold on, I got it here.
Wendigo.
says star John Spencer from The West Wing. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, that's what the impression I got. Yeah, right. Yeah. But now you're just saying, oh, well, he wasn't there. He didn't even know Wendigo. Nothing. It was not even introduced back when he was in the desert and he got superpowers from drinking blood. So this is no longer, there's no mystery here anymore. This is a world filled with people who, you know, oh, you got a snake bite, you suck your arm. Next thing you know, you're Superman.
Yeah. It was just a variation on vampire ideas. I mean, that's all
Absolutely.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
It falls apart.
Is this a vampire slash zombie movie?
Yeah, in a small way, it is. I'm more vampire than zombie because zombie, it's vampires. They're gaining strength from, and they need the flesh of other humans to maintain their power and you know, bring Jeffrey Jones back.
Okay. There's a little Resident Evil zombie going on.
Maybe. Yeah. Jill and Barry. Yeah. I got a little of that in there. yeah. But it's funny because, so like Neil McDonough had done things, already, you know, he was a known quantity. I guess he was just about to do Band of Brothers, which is an amazing role he was in. Boy, they sure killed him off quick. Because part of me likes this whole, hey, look at this misfit band of idiots that are supposedly making up this fort, and there's some comedy there. There could be, and I like that he's the gun trigger happy. Let's go out and kill everything, crazy person. And there's the drunk guy, and there's the religious weird squirrely guy, and that I wanted all those people to last. I checked it. We were less than halfway through the film and all of these people were killed.
Right.
They were dead. And it was down to Robert Carlyle, full Monty Robert Carlyle over there. He was in that movie.
28 days later.
Yeah, 28 days later. There he is. And I guess Jeffrey Jones comes back. And that was supposed to be a big shock, but I wasn't really shocked.
Spoilers.
And then Guy Pearce, and that's it. And nobody else. I mean, the doctor dude and, you know, the lady, Indian lady was there, But all these characters with all this potential and actually some decent acting credibility, gone, out, done, finished. Mm-hmm. That's a loss, a net loss in my opinion.
Well, you know, this is kind of this is almost a slasher movie. So, I mean, you got to kill off your cast. But, yeah, it was sad that you had to kill off such a great cast.
Well,
yeah.
do you think that the John Spencer bit, again from The West Wing, Leo McGarry on that show, you should watch it if you haven't. when he shows up to the camp to check out what's going on, and he gets a taste of that stew and just kind of starts chowing down on it.
Right.
Was that supposed to say to us, oh,
now we're supposed
next
to be we're
generation
supposed to
of, you know,
we're supposed to be going, no, don't do it. Don't do it.
Well, we're not supposed to, but I mean,
it's people.
But I mean, my point is maybe it's back to the zombie comparison, which is he's just going to continue the cycle. Now he's going to have a taste and need it and be stronger. And
it's two this year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know if you ever make a sequel to this, but.
You always hope, you know.
Yeah.
When you make a movie, you always hope.
Because he was loving it, man. He got all down in it. It was like, and kept eating it.
This is good.
And he starts dreaming and saying this in his sleep.
Windiggy.
Anyway. Windiggy.
It's so good.
Limfliglom. Yeah, Wikipedia. The first sentence in Wikipedia's article about Wendigos say the Wendigo, also known as Windigo, Weendigo, Windago, Windiga, Wintico, Witcow, and numerous other variants, including Manahaha.
I like Witcow. That's good.
Witcow.
Well, then there's this one.
Windiggy.
That one's different than any of those you just said. Right. That's great.
Quick, somebody give her Wikipedia and add that one.
Yeah, but Wendigay. And also, something I noticed, no ladies except for the sister to the Native American guy. That's it.
You mean Native American Legolas?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. She was it.
Yep.
That's kind of rare, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
It was totally a dude fest, but they were on the edge. It's kind of like the wall.
Well, I mean it was like discriminating. I just mean it's like, I don't know. I just, I don't know. It felt like the kind of movie there would have been a love interest or somebody who was a tragic side character or something.
Tread lightly, Scott Johnson. Have you been to the comments section on FilmSack Maximum Overdrive after our
geez.
Are talking about?
Well, yeah, I'm never going to tread lightly with boners like that thinking. Because that guy is a white male, and he can F off. Because he doesn't... How does he know what a woman feels like? He has no idea.
Holy cow.
He doesn't know.
I've barely ever read these comments, because I have no idea what you're talking
about. I mean no offense to him personally, but anybody... I always find that people are like... Ah, you bunch of PC idiots think women don't have enough of a thing, or you think they're victims all the time. It's always a white dude saying that. It's never a female who has an actual perspective on these things. Talk to an actual girl and see what she says about those questions. Gretchen
actually got in there. Gretchen was at Nerd Tackler, and she got in there and got into it.
They can all get in there. I could care less, because I ain't going to argue it. But I'm just saying here, I'll say here on the air,
right?
That guy's he's wrong. He's wrong. I'm the same. Look, I have no right to tell anybody how they feel. And for me to go, women are just whiners. The hell kind of talk is that? It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Anyway.
So last comments on film.
Can I say something stupider?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just after describing the Wendigo as by all those names that Brian Ebbett used, the Wikipedia page says, the legend lends its name to the disputed modern medical term Wendigo psychosis.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Really?
Wendigo psychosis. Supposedly a culture-bound disorder that features symptoms such as intense craving for human flesh and a fear the sufferer is a cannibal.
Well, you're never going to get any comments for that one. That's fine. You didn't offend anybody there.
Wendigo psychosis.
But anybody... Now I'm all irritated.
Yes,
all we were saying is women don't always have to be damsels in distresses in movies. That's all we're saying. That's all I made my point from the stage of Nerdtacular. Was you can be more creative than that. You don't have to just have... Emilio Estevez does not have to, quote, sleep with and save the girl every time. Sometimes she can save herself, and maybe she can save him. Maybe she can get him in bed.
She did save him because he couldn't get back from pumping the horrible, as Brian pointed out, gas all day.
Back-breaking work.
She had to carry him off stage left because he was too exhausted.
I just think guys who think they know how girls should feel should knock it off. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
back to the point. Were you guys okay? You know, one of the things that's great about movies is we get to look for the title of the movie during the movie. It felt like to me they were dancing all around.
Right,
rabbits.
They used every single word for hungry,
right. Insatiable appetite. I was like, I was freaking out. I'm like, just say it, say ravenous.
Yeah,
say
right. They never did.
They never did?
Nope.
Wow.
No, I don't remember a single person saying ravenous, and I was really hopeful because we had just talked about that with the other one, with the car trucks deal. What's it called? The Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive.
Where she said it. Yeah.
Yep.
We have a clear and present danger. I want that again. I want that in every movie, and this movie had every opportunity to say ravenous, and they didn't do it.
There's so many weird things in this movie, too. Like, yeah. There, he goes to California. Much is said. Oh, you're coming out here to get some sun, and then he's in the Alps. right.
Well, it was the Sierra Nevadas, technically, according to the location thing. They really filmed there, but they also had all the studio indoor stuff was filmed in Prague, and then the bits where he popped out of the body truck and took over the Mexican town was in Mexico. A little crazy to me. Just go to Vancouver and do the whole damn schmear.
Yeah,
you don't have to drive all over the place and fly all over the world for a movie like this. Where's this budget coming from? And fancy lamb stew catering? What are we paying for?
Like, when you say California, I think coast. They filmed this thing in Slovakia, not coast.
Yeah.
There's nothing coastal about Slovakia. It's as landlocked as you can be in Europe.
Right. I wouldn't eat that meat either, is all I'm saying. I've met some Slovaks. I know what's going on over there. So listen to this. John Spencer, I mentioned him before, Leo McGarry from The West Wing. It's his last film. He died after this.
Really?
Between its release and his death from a heart attack in December 2005, he eschewed many movie roles due to his full-time job playing Leo McGarry on The West Wing. And he died after this. So that was it for him. He is an awesome actor. And underused here and wasn't on very much, but like if you want to see him even in throwaway fun movies like The Rock, where he plays an FBI guy kind of trying to track down Sean Connery all the time, he's great in that. Just a really intense, cool actor. I wish he would have hung around a little longer because he was rad. Anyway.
Right.
And he was scary. The weirdest thing is on The West Wing, his character the season previous had a heart attack, the character did, and then the storyline about him recovering and coming back to the White House, and then died of an actual heart attack toward the end there. That was just like double whammy. It was crazy. Anyway, West Wing, available now, streaming. Go watch it. I love that show. Are you kidding me?
You know what? What?
I love it. It's really good. How about this? How about this? Neil McDonough dies every time he's in anything.
Yeah, he does a good job at that, doesn't he?
When doesn't he die?
Desperate Housewives? He probably did. I stopped watching.
But, oh, he was in that? I didn't know that. I didn't watch that show at all.
He played a bad guy there, too. He's basically the good-looking, like the dark background good-looking dude that, you know, you bring into your thing. Just like you trust him at the beginning. Oh, wait, he's got a darker side.
Thin facade of blue-eyed, blonde hair, and I'm just beneath that is a psycho. I mean,
I bet he's a real prick.
Well, now everybody thinks he really is that guy from that commercial, being a total dick about his car. But he's probably the nicest guy, for all we know. Who knows?
Oh, probably, exactly.
Yeah, I like guys like that.
Dum-Dum Dugan in the all the Captain America stuff, too. The old Captain America.
Oh, wait.
Oh, from the 80s?
No. The Captain America movie, but when it's in the old war times.
He's
Dum Dugan, the guy with the hat.
Right.
Yeah. No. He's good in that. And he played it real straight in Band of Brothers. Mm-hmm. There was no sinister or anything going on there, which throws you a little bit because you're still kind of not sure. Mm-hmm. So he's hanging out with like Donnie Wahlberg and you're like, don't trust him, Donnie. Don't trust him.
Don't do it.
Also, don't shoot Bruce Willis while he's not looking at you while you're in your underwear in the bathroom. Anyway, so here's another question. How big are the bears in
Sierra the bear Nevada's? Trap was
good lord.
Good enormous.
Wow, yeah, kidding.
Can you imagine the spring it would take to actually operate that thing?
I know.
Right, like, to be able to pull it apart to set the thing, you'd have to have like five people with you.
Also, Guy Pearce died from that, by the way, because all he did was lay there. It didn't chomp on him.
I figured that was a rollover for like a part two or something.
Well, he died, but he shouldn't have. That was stupid.
Yeah.
I just went, well, that wouldn't have killed you there, buddy. Robert Carlyle. Guy Pearce could die because the thing came down and got him, right?
Mm-hmm. Right,
but
right.
Carlyle die from just...
He was on another... I mean, he was basically on the same set of spikes on the flip side.
Yeah, but it didn't flip. You know what I'm saying, though? He was already resting on those.
Oh.
And they didn't pop upward. So there was
but the extra weight of it springing down on Guy Pearce would have pushed Guy Pearce down on him harder and pushed him on those spikes more.
Dear Adam Savage and Jamie Hyman, if you could please reenact this, because so I had a lot of those kind of physics questions, would a bunch of tree branches truly stop you from falling to your death off a cliff?
No, that was the scene that just like I couldn't get it. I couldn't, as soon as he starts hitting all those branches, I can't even watch.
Yeah.
Like you would just be torn apart falling through those trees.
Yeah. I've only ever seen this.
Broke his leg. Come on.
They do this in cartoons and they did it in Avatar when he fell off his dragon and had to crash land through the trees with Zoe Saldana or whatever. And that stuff's kind of believable because you're in this mystic world of, you know, fakery. When they're getting all gritty like this, I just couldn't buy it. It's like, no, he had more than a broken shin. And also, Neil McDonough would not have the strength to come back alive just long enough to try to strangle him for no reason.
That was the correct.
Why was he choking him?
Well, because he got him killed. He's like, you jerk. Stop running away. He already hated him.
He's just like an angry dick, even in the end.
He is. Love it.
That kind of stuff's stupid, though. And that last fight is just super dumb. And they're just having a little spoon there on the trap. Sorry, Corinne. That part was super stupid.
I liked all of it. What about this this kind of visual trope they had going on? It's the character description montage. They describe the group of characters they're going to describe, and then they kind of go one through one, and either is spot on with the description or it's juxtaposition to the character one.
Right. It's funny. It's like they're doing their whatever their stereotype thing is as they're getting name checked.
Right.
Weird.
He's always got a bottle in his hand.
Damn.
This one's always smoking pot with the Indian.
First I say it, then I show it.
I don't know what
that sound
was.
Really funny.
Just made a weird sound for that. What was the guy, the doctor guy, he kept saying you don't want him working on you. Don't get sick while you're here. He seemed fine.
He did not. He
what was
like,
wrong with him?
Well, was he the drunk or was he?
He was totally
Marquette?
Drunk. No, he was the drunk. And he woke up, when somebody tried to wake him up. when they.
Okay. No, I forgot about the alcoholism with the doctor.
Right.
And it's also that's a trope in itself. Every camp doctor in anything set in the 1800s, a Western or otherwise, he's always the drunk.
Right, right. Angry drunk then.
Yeah.
Yep. And then you always got to say something like, try not to get sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're coming out of Jeffrey Tambor, Rush. What's
Jones.
His name? Jones.
Jeffrey
Thank
Jones.
You. Thank you. I thought of Tambor and Rush for no reason. Mm. There you have it.
They're both good actors.
any other thoughts before we graduate here? Yes.
I really thought that David Arquette was going to come back with some peyote.
Weed.
I thought he'd have more of a role than just yelling three names and then dying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. He didn't do anything. Yeah.
No.
This is post-anacrophobia or not that. What was it? Eight-legged freaks?
Was it not?
Scream and...
I thought Eight-Legged Freaks was after this.
No. In 99, dude, this would have been... Well, now I don't know.
Yeah, this would have been a couple of years. I want to say that was mid to late 90s.
This movie's 15 years old.
Yeah, think about that.
I don't know.
Nick was not even born yet. The weird bit is this is the Matrix year. So anytime anyone ever says, mm-hmm. 99 is when that movie came out, and I cannot help but just go, Matrix, well, doesn't hold up, doesn't compare to that.
Mm-mm.
Nothing near like that. So
not as
good. Big judgment for me. Not as good. All right. Any other thoughts? Anybody else?
Oh, folks? I get more notes.
I do. I have so many. Black dude dies first.
Yeah.
I guess he's triple alert for that.
Really? Yeah. Did he really? Did he? Wait. Yeah. Who's the black guy? Remind me.
Just like in a big opening scene or something?
Yeah. No, he was describing the Johnson. The Johnson slave guy.
Yes.
All right. That gets a. There you go. Yeah, nicely done. Was there a montage?
Yes. Oh, what was it? I almost wrote it down. I didn't. It was like a walking through the woods montage or a...
Something.
Yeah.
All right, we'll give it this then. There you go. Montage. I don't remember what happened, but I think there was one.
There was definitely a montage, and I remember it being kind of unusual.
Mm.
Like, we've never had one of these before.
Mm.
The stew made me hungry. I'm not gonna lie.
The stew did make me very hungry.
Really? Can you eat with a hole in your stomach? I don't know. I'm questioning.
Well, who me?
Well, if that hole is getting sealed up as you eat, sure. It's like that Fix-A-Flat stuff. That goo you spray in the tire.
Yeah,
it feels right. And then you drive on it. Yeah.
Well, Jeffrey Rush there. He had a major abdominal stab wound, right? Like tore right through him.
Yeah.
And he still could eat later. I still don't like the trope of the, I just don't like the whole conceit that human flesh heals all wounds. That bugs me.
Right. Yeah. Well, we absolutely know that it doesn't. I mean, we know cannibalism.
We are sure don't know this.
Yeah.
Speaking of the A team.
We've seen the
A team. I got a trope.
Okay, wait.
We're sort of military. I love this trope where we have ranks and it's clearly like, I don't know, we all went to boot camp years and years ago, but this is a great example of a bunch of people who are just sort of military. Like the Space Marines and Aliens. We call them Space Marines, but they don't really act like Marines. And the A-Team, they were special forces.
Yeah.
And you look at these people and like, so this is what happens to our special forces after they've been out of the service just like 3 years.
It reminds me of most Vietnam movies, because it's like, we need to get to Forward Base Charlie or whatever. And they get there and all sense of decorum and who's in charge and all that stuff is lost. Everyone's lounging around, smoking pot, reading girly magazines, naked in the river. Like there's no one's in charge. That happens. I hate that. It happens all the time. And that's what this place was. You get there and you're like, oh, that guy's writing a hymn. That dude's so drunk he's puking. That guy's smoking some kind of peyote. Like it's the same thing. Yep. Every military thing does this and it drives me crazy. But I think what it is, I think it appeals to our sense of like, we don't want to see loss of control, or when order is lost, then all is lost kind of human fear, you know, like when the rules are gone, who's in charge of anything. And now we're all just, it's just anarchy and chaos. It's too easy to do that in movies now, and they all.
Oh yeah, go watch Star Trek Into Darkness and pay attention to people barking orders and whether or not those orders get obeyed.
Right,
almost almost no order in that movie ever gets obeyed. Right. It's bizarre.
Really?
Yeah. Go watch it for
it's
that.
It's kind of funny. Yeah.
Watch it just for that. Like anytime someone gives someone else an order, see if it happens. Yeah. It almost never happens in that movie.
And Starfleet's supposed to be all about that. And they, you're right. They totally, it's totally subverted at every turn. That's a weird thing to do. I don't know. I don't understand it. It must have been a problem in some war where maybe it's a problem in every war. Because you've got guys on the front who've seen some stuff, man. Mm-hmm. And now they just got to drown it out with, I don't know,
Lamb stew.
Yeah, CCR and lamb stew. all right, here's some clips for you then. We got this one here. You want to hear Guy Pearce breathing real hard? Is that something you've been hoping for?
Sure, sure.
Well, then I got you covered. Here you go. I'd do that too if my guy was pierced, if you know what I'm saying.
Was that just him looking at his steak? Soup?
Yep. Yeah. He was looking at his blood, his water steak. It was so weird. All right. Here is the what? I wrote the tree nose.
I can't read my own writing.
The three nose of Ravenous. Here you go. These are the three big nose.
No loco weed. No peyote. No women.
Got it. No women.
Like how the one woman has to kind of emphasize the no women part.
And she's way in the background going, no women. All right. Here's some orders, Brandy. Take some orders. All right. So here you go. Here's one of them. Here you go.
I'm writing a religious hymn.
Well, could you find some inspiration somewhere else? And could you get us some ice?
No, because this is the 1800s.
Faraday was, in particular, in this movie, I think, just more mumbly than usual than he usually is. He's always got a little bit like this, a little mousy or whatever. But
yes, right.
He played that perfectly in Lost when he was the time traveling.
Oh God, yeah,
he's great. I love watching him, dude. Kind of the same thing in everything. I just don't care. He's one of those actors I am happy to see is in a thing, and he was great in Saving Ryan's Privates. How's it go? Saving Private Ryan. There you go. Mm-hmm. He was the squirrely little, he came first to just be a journalist or whatever. And then he saw some stuff, you know, saw some killing.
Saw some stuff.
And he was too chicken to go into that room and save Adam Goldberg. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Right.
And that Adam Goldberg death still haunts me.
Oh, God. I forgot about that. Jeez.
That was something else. Holy hell, that thing. All right. Moving on.
Thanks,
how about this
thanks
one?
A lot.
How about see if this makes you hungry a bit? Here you go.
And when I returned, the others were cooking his legs for dinner.
Oh.
Oh. Legs?
Oh.
There was a lot of weird grunting in this movie.
Yeah,
there was.
I have more later. Stay tuned for that.
Great.
All right. Best line of the film right here. Here you go.
He was licking me!
There you go. He was licking me. Almost sounded sing-songy. Hold on.
He was licking me!
Get out a little something on that.
Yeah, it's Blue Bayou is what he's singing.
Oh, Blue Bayou. Yeah.
He was licking me where the fishing boats.
Where my stomach bled.
Somebody I hope is going to be inspired to give us a mashup.
Yeah, come on, lazy butts. Get to it. Here's a strange soundtrack moment. Here you go. That's really weird.
Man, and I love Damon Albarn, and I'm just bummed that...
I know, like that one, woohoo, that song, it's amazing.
I've been studying music since I was 4 years old, and it is hard to count out that song. It's bugging me. It gets stuck in my head, and I'm trying to imagine it on the page. That's a really strange piece of music.
What, the thing we just played, or the woohoo? Which one?
The thing you just played.
Oh, okay, good. Just making sure, because the woohoo is pretty good. What's the name of that song, actually?
It's called Song Number 2.
Oh, that's right. It should have been called, Hey, We're Making a Movie in the 90s, and We Need Trailer Music.
Just called it woohoo.
Yeah, woohoo would have been good. All right, here we go. Here's how the Wendigo, Wendigo, whatever works. It's how it functions.
How do you stop it?
You don't. You Shut ever up. Give yourself. Wendigo eats. must eat more, more. Never enough. He takes. Never, never gives. You start with Digo. You give yourself. You must die.
Wow. So, I don't know what that is. She had a weird accent. That wasn't Cherokee or something. That was something else. There was like a...
I don't think she studied her lines before she did that scene.
Yeah, it was kind of ad-libbed. It came across ad-libbed.
My home this is. All right, John Spencer steps up to the plate and does his own little weird accent. So here it is.
You found the cave.
There's nothing in there. There's nothing inside. There's no blood tracks. No rope. No bodies.
You don't believe me, sir.
Well, we have 4 missing soldiers, Captain, and no bodies.
It was kind of a weird mix between his normal kind of thing and then a little British-y, leftover-y deal going on there. All right, here's a clip called Saying It Wrong.
Windiggy is the stuff of campfires. Would you stop squirming, Lindis? I know I mispronounced it. I'm making a point.
I love that.
Someone get the president. We have to go on the air. That. Yeah, exactly.
I know I'm... Stop squirming.
Windiggy.
I'm going to keep that one for a while. Here's a... Ooh, this one's a hubba hubba moment. It's kind of hot. Here you go.
Would you take off your shirt, please, and show me your shoulder? Please, Colonel.
Please. Oh, please. Take off that shirt. Oh, my.
What was up with that? What happened with that? He got shot in the shoulder.
No, he got healed because of the eating the meat. Eating the man meat.
Man meat. I mean, but he didn't... I thought you still got scars. I just thought you'd like...
No, he Wolverines this up, dude. That's that's why the movie bugs me so bad, because they're making a point about eating other human meat that will heal all wounds, and I think that's real stupid.
Right.
It may make you crazy or something, or... You know, like, yeah, this concept that doing it is such a moral, reprehensible thing, right, that you would go nuts or PTSD immediately, or, you know, all that seems real plausible to me. Like, if the 4 of us were trapped in a train car somewhere and it came down to it and we're like, all right, we're going to eat Ibbit.
Deal.
It starts with me.
It always starts with you.
I've got the most meat, so.
Well, sure. It might end, and that's our point. It might end with you. Just kidding. But anyway. No, but if I'm, you know, if we get to that low point, then it wouldn't be that surprising if the rest of us are messed up for life. Even if we survive that, it's going to goof us up. We ate our friend Brian Ibbit, right?
Right.
I can totally buy that problem. I can't buy that I'm healing bullet wounds with it. That's where it breaks.
You're basically just saying, yeah, I don't like the whole premise of this movie, which is okay. It's fine to say that, but
I guess that is what I'm saying.
That is what the whole foundation of this movie is based on, is that eating meat, human meat, cures you from
cancer, your ails, your hepatitis. What was the other thing he said he had? Tuberculosis.
Well, he had tuberculosis, which was very common back then. So that was the reason why he started.
What'd they call that? Something lung.
Dirty lung.
Jimmy lung.
It's got a case of the Jimmy lung.
I feel like it was a simpler time when diseases had these crazy names and no one really knew what the hell to do. So you could have a really complicated, carcinoma, blasto, L. Pacino, whatever, right? You know, something we'd have today. And then, for short. But then back then, they would just call it, you got the pine tree kickleback or whatever. And the guy would maybe die or live or whatever. But it was always like this, I don't know.
They called it what they saw. They called it what the symptoms were, what they saw the symptoms. So it makes sense. Yeah.
You got Clyde drinking disease over there or whatever. And really, it was, you know, cirrhosis of the liver.
Right.
But because it's almost scarier that we know so much now to me. Than if somebody said, like with my cataracts, right? They could treat them and they replace them and I'm fine. But if it was 1845, I'd be rocking on a porch somewhere going, you're new around these parts, are you? I'm the old blind idiot who tells you stories when you come by. Like, that would be my job.
This is not that far off, even from just, you know, a couple of generations ago. My grandma, she went to the doctor and they said, well, do you have any, you know, known illnesses like diabetes or anything? It's like, no, I don't have that, but I do have sugar. So they called it sugar.
Sugar.
I love that. That is so much more. What is it that I'm trying to pull out of this? That's so much more
quaint.
But you could deal with it. Like, if there was some nobility to it, like you said, what's wrong? Oh, she's got the sugar.
Right, exactly.
You know, that can be the vapors. Well, the vapors is more for the crazy city ladies. Folk, right? But when you're out in the country, like, they would have said, "Old man, how'd you lose your sight?" And I'd say, had a bad case of the
eye of the crow.
They got the eye of the crow, exactly. And it's cool sounding in a weird way. Anyway, whatever. Right.
I'm going to rename all my diseases. Anything that disorders, I'm going to rename them just for Scott.
I've romanticized it, obviously.
Because
nobody really wanted to have cancer and not have a name or a cause or a way to deal with it.
I got the lumps. Right. It's not good.
Yeah, you don't want to say, I've got a tumor on my kidney. You want to say, the thing what ails me. You know what that is, don't you? It's called the wooden shoe or something. And then everyone's like, yeah, the wooden shoe, the poor old man. I don't know. It's the Western lover in me. I can't help it.
It is.
All right. Here,
I'm going to start calling gout Kingsfoot.
Kingsfoot is good.
Kingsfoot, sure.
Kingsfoot. Ah, that's awesome. That also sounds like a game you'd play.
I see you got your foot up there elevated like it's some kind of, king or something, old Kingfoot.
What can I do you for? You might want to play a game of Pharaoh or a Kingsfoot? check around the side. What? I don't know what this is.
You find Cleves?
No.
You check around outside?
No.
Well, check around outside, woman.
Woman!
Quit playing that piano and go look for Cletus.
Quit overmixing the music to be louder than the dialogue, woman.
Quit listening to your damn blur and go get...
damn blur. That made me laugh. All right. How about Think of the Horse? There you go.
That was for Cleves. And this is for my horse.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
That's pretty cartoony, that last punch.
2x4 is what he hit him with, it sounded like.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Although I couldn't feel that bad for the horse, because we had no character development on the horse.
And I thought it was pigs.
Was it pigs?
It looked like pigs' heads to me, but horses, whatever.
Whatever, man. Well, you're right. They did look like pig heads. Pig heads, roly-poly pig heads.
Maybe they called their horses pigs or pigs horses or
who knows.
Yeah.
Maybe he said pig. Let's check it.
This is for my horse.
No, he said horse.
Horse.
This is my horse. We're
Windiggy.
Ben Franklin once said.
Ben Franklin once said, eat to live. Don't live to eat.
There's some more grunting. Hey, Robert Carlyle, you are better in other things, buddy.
Yeah.
I like him, though.
Rumpelstiltskin.
He's really good in that. Have you seen that? What is it?
Once Upon a Time?
He's great in that.
He is.
Steals
one of the best
things
about that, actually.
He was good in Stargate Universe. He was good in your Full
was
Monty.
Was he in Deadwood?
He was not in Deadwood.
Was he in The West Wing?
Nope.
Then let's move on.
A lot of these other guys were Jeffrey Combs here. What's his name? Jeffrey Wright
Jones. You have named every single other Jeffrey in acting.
Mm-hmm. He was in The West Wing once. Just throwing that out there. All right. Do you guys like a good squeaky cigar sound in a movie? I do.
Were these e-cigs or were these the real thing?
This is the real thing. So. Any time in a movie somebody's puffing on either a cigarette or a cigar and they make a squeak sound, I like to capture it. So here's this one. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like the cigar, this instead of rolling the cigar in a tobacco leaf, they rolled it in a balloon.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. It's like kissing sounds in movies. I hate them. So when it happens, I capture them. All right, here's I don't know what this is. Here you go.
Really sneaky.
Oh, yeah. The bear trap. Yeah. It's very sneaky. There you go. That's your clips. And that means, what does it mean? It means the film chat. Oh, hold on. Something just crashed. Nope. There it is right here. As I called it at Nerdtacular, the film chack cheek list, or whatever I said.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
Film chack. Jeffrey Jones is weird no matter what. Check. That happened.
And so is Jeffrey Rush, Jeff Daniels, Jeff Bridges, Jeff Goldblum.
Yep. Look at all the Jeffs. So many Jeffs.
Oh, there are a lot more Jeffs. A
lot more Jeffs. I haven't even told you about the ones with the G-E-O-F whatever names. There's a lot
Jeffrey
of those.
Jeffrey Rush is one of those.
Oh, is he one of those?
Yeah.
Oh.
G-Off.
I didn't know that. Yeah, G-Off.
G-Offrey.
Giant oversized novelty bear trap. Check. That's in there. And then finally... Make a vegetarian actor do 50 takes with lamb's meat in his mouth? Check. Star Trek connections, we only have one. It's Neil McDonough, who played Private Reich In that's who he was in this. In Star Trek, he played Lieutenant Hawk. I guess that's a bump up in rank. In the USS Enterprise, E. Helmsman in the Star Trek First Contact movie. McDonough is a huge Star Trek fan, and playing Hawk allowed him to fulfill a lifetime dream of being in a Star Trek show or movie.
Me too.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. You were in there as well, right? You were the Klingon.
No, that was my dream for him to be in Star Trek.
You were either Ursa or Bator. Soundtrack great. I'd give it an LH for Love Hate, because there were a couple of moments where I thought it might work, and then they would just blow it, and then kind of okay for a minute, and then terrible again. And I think just on the whole, that's just an awful soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a great soundtrack.
Woo-hoo. Explain.
I like to listen to it by itself.
No,
it's
you
just
don't.
Such a unique.
No,
yeah, I did. I went to the YouTube, and you can listen to the whole soundtrack on YouTube, and I find it kind of creatively inspiring. It's just very unusual.
Me, Johnson.
It does.
It takes me down a notch.
Then I find myself gnawing on my arms.
It reminded me just a tiny bit of the score to the movie Cold Mountain. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah. I like that movie.
Same kind of time frame.
You know what? It's a bit. That's a good example. Also, the one where the super long title, the Jesse James shot the dude with the gun movie, with the Casey Affleck in it.
Coward, Robert Ford.
That's the one. That had also one of these weird, discordant, out of time soundtracks.
Jack White do Cold Mountain? I gotta go look now.
Oh, maybe. Did he?
Oh wow! I hadn't thought about that.
Could be Jack White. I like Jack White.
I actually have that score here somewhere.
He was still with the Stripes then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, he was in the movie. Maybe he didn't do the soundtrack. Looking the screen.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking. There's a bunch of different
music.
It's
a Nicole Kidman deal, right? Mm-hmm. Jude Law, I think. Do I have that right?
Yes, there are some Jack White songs on this soundtrack.
Okay. Looking at it.
But is Jude Law in that movie?
Yes. Yes, damn it.
I just have one damn question. Jude Law in that movie?
Renee Zellweger, Brendan Gleeson, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Natalie Portman, Giovanni Ribisi, Donald Sutherland. I could go on.
That's great. It's like JFK for movie. A new generation. Jeez. That's wonderful. Yeah, like all those people you just mentioned. All right. Brendan Gleeson. Do you guys ever see In Bruges? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
What a movie, great. Dude. What a freaking movie. You know what? F. Tarantino. That's my favorite, funny, dark crime movie. Screw Tarantino and his feet fetish.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else we got here? Oh, I know. Twitter post. It's where you guys round it up, sum it up, really, is the way to put it, in 140 characters or less. Let's see how you do this time. Let's start this time with Randy.
Ravenous. Like a supply run to town, it's only got three rules. No loco weed, no peyote, and no women. Seriously.
Really aren't. I'm not even sure that Indian lady was a woman, to be honest. Not 100% sure. Brian Dunaway, it's your turn.
Ravenous. Like six men rubbing down a half-dead man in a 19th century hot tub. It should make you feel uncomfortable. And it does. Bourbon break.
Nicely done. Don't throw up. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Ravenous. A bunch of dicks in the woods start eating each other. But if you're looking for a bunch of good actors in a bad movie, you could do worse than Ravagee.
Hey, nicely done. Bunch of dicks in the woods is a great name for a new movie I want to see. Well, while you guys were sort of arguing over best way to sum this thing up, this just handed to me. I got it right here. Alternate titles. Quote, meat is murder, tasty, tasty murder, or Neil McDonough never truly dies. We got an email. Colon Goose wrote this.
Oh, that's what you get, actually, after eating some man meat.
All right. Yeah. Colon Goose says, again, that sounds like a condition. What do you got there? He's suffering from the colon goose.
Little colon goose.
Scott,
it'll pass.
Who on earth told you that Day of the Dead is the Romero movie to care about? You need to fire them and remove them from your life immediately. I implore it now. Well, hold on. Let me back up. We didn't pick that movie because we thought it was the most important movie. We just know that Romero said it was.
Right.
He says it's his favorite.
Fire Romero if you want to fire somebody.
Yeah, I can't fire that guy. He would kill me with his giant glasses, just angle the sun just right and melt me. I implore you to watch Romero's first two of the Dead films, Night of the Living Dead 68 and Dawn of the Dead 78. Both of these are undisputed classic horror films. And they are why Romero is deservedly considered the master of the horror genre. I don't know if he's considered that, though. He's considered the master of the zombie genre.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say that he's that. You may even argue that, but not horror.
The no, father I would give that to either Stephen King or Clive Barker. Or
yeah, dude, Barker. He always had. You know what I always remember about Barker? Not just Pinhead things, but that like his books always had like a giant ball of people. Do you remember that? What was that book? Where was it? Book of Blood or Books of Blood? Anyway, there's an image on the cover of a giant like a.
Oh, it's right, but it's like you have to look closely to realize that they're people.
They're all naked thing, right? Dudes and ladies in it, but it's like a big ball of yarn, like a cat would play with if you'd stood back and looked at it. But you get close, and it's made of people. It's amazing. That's all I think about when you said his name. Anyway, he goes on to say, Day of the Dead is cheesy schlock compared to both of them. Well, that may be true, but it was a good film to sack. They also completely debunk Randy's suggestion. Oh, Randy, you ready for this? Hold on tight, buddy.
Yeah, let's go.
They also completely debunk Randy's suggestion that this isn't a deep genre. Not only are both films terrifying, but Night of the Living Dead features subtle and intellectual political undercurrents, while Dawn of the Dead has an abundance of sharp satire and social commentary on wealth and class. I really think you'll like both of them. Well, I think we've all seen all these.
Yeah,
I've seen them.
Yeah, and I agree. Night of the Dead was that.
And Dawn's my favorite, and I also really like the remake, so I'm with you on these movies.
Yeah, but the idea that there were, you know, Michael Mann made a geopolitical zombie movie is just ridiculous.
I kind of agree. Wait, Michael Mann. What? Michael Mann.
I'm arguing the point. There's not a lot of depth.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a good point. Although, dude, freaking Heat. That's a hell of a movie right there. Heat.
They were all zombies.
They had stuff to say in that movie. I like that movie a lot. We should do that on the show just because I want to watch it again. Let's see. Where were we? Oh, yeah.
It's a good movie.
I really think both of you like them. Let's see. They're widely considered to be far and away the best films in Romero's filmography. He deserves the props he gets as a horror pioneer. Colin Goose. Well, Colin Goose. No, I don't think anybody disagrees. I think right. He assumed that because we picked that one. We picked that one, I think, primarily because it is the oddball out. And it's the cult weird thing that a lot of people like more than maybe they should, and you know that had all kinds of film sack reasons to watch it.
Also, streaming on Netflix, very important factor.
Yeah, that key, that's part of this. So, yeah, there you go. But we'd love your feedback, Colin Goose. You should change your name to Colin Grease because that's what it makes me want to say every time you say it, Colin Grease.
Ew.
Email us.
That's not very good either.
It's not good. All right, filmsack@gmail.com. I got a bad case of the colon grease. next film is Return of the Killer Tomatoes. We're going straight to the sequel.
Wow. How are we ever going to be able to figure out what's going on?
I wonder.
Now, hold on. These are tomatoes, right? Well, how did this happen?
Now, this is the one with Clooney, right?
What?
Was Clooney in this?
That's a great thing if it's true. Is that true?
Yeah, I think this is a George Clooney joint. Let me pull it up here. Hold on.
Killer Tomatoes. 1988, right?
Oh, this was before.
Oh, my Lord, it is.
This was before ER, but I think it was after
Anthony Stark. Anthony Stark, George Clooney, and Karen Waldron. You're right. George Clooney is totally in this.
Wait, Anthony Stark?
That's what it says. Hmm. Oh, wow. It's got an E at the end, though.
I'm out. Yeah. Still, it's Tony Stark is in this.
Yeah, he's got a metal suit. Yeah, George Clooney's in this. That's crazy. Let me see who Anthony Stark is just to see how widely birthed their two careers went after this. Oh yeah, we're not even in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
Now I'm double excited. That's cool to get a big time actor in an old piece of crap. I've never seen it, so this would be a lot of fun. It's a good pick. So it's Return of the Killer Tomatoes, 1998. Do your homework, everybody. It's streaming right now.
Not even in among his first 10 movies. I'm surprised, or 10 appearances. He was on the first ER, the 84-85 one.
The comedy, right?
Yeah. Then The Facts of Life and 1988. So like about 17 or 18 roles in.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Look at that. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And he actually doesn't have like a major movie until 96.
Yep.
So this is almost a good decade before he kind of breaks through.
Listen to this stuff. Bodies of Evidence, Without Warning, Terror in the Towers, Sunset Beat, The Harvest, Jack's Place, and my favorite, the character of Booker Brooks on Roseanne.
Oh, I want to see that episode now.
Yeah. Wow, he really was, that's crazy. And I've told you guys how his dad, not George Sr., but, Nick Clooney, his dad, Nicholas Clooney, was our local Fox affiliate news anchor for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
All before his son made it big. And man, everyone loved Nick Clooney around here. They thought he was the man. So he would have been brother to Rosemary Clooney.
Rosemary, yeah.
Yeah. You look great. That one, right?
I think that was Ethel Merman you just
I've got me a Chrysler. It seats about 20.
Now you're in Fred Schneider territory.
Come on. All right, fine. So there you go. That's exciting, and I'm totally stoked, and I can't wait to see that next week. So please return and be here with us for that. We got a lot of others coming after that that are also equally great. It's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is the email. No, the website. That's a website. I know the difference. I know what's going on.
.com, yeah.
Been doing this for a while. Filmsack.com, that's our website. Go there and comment about how I am way too pro-women, okay? Let's hear more of that. Email, filmsack@gmail.com is our email address on Twitter. You can follow us at filmsack. And while you're at it, follow Randy at Randy Deluxe. Follow me at Scott Johnson. Follow Ibbot at Coverville. Follow Brian at The Brian Dunaway. And check out iTunes and wherever podcasts are dealt. You can leave us a review. We'd love to hear those. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you next time. I knew someone was going to do that.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
He was licking me!